Hello, everyone. Sandow Podcast number 36. Today is going to be a little bit about some of my recent appearances on a couple podcast shows, particularly Forbes Web 3, the Builders podcast, and then the Tech Talk podcast with iHeartDomains. There's going to be a little bit of commentary woven into today. But ultimately, this is mostly about some things I saw, some things I noted, and some patterns that I wanted to get out there that I'd like to share. Yeah. Disclaimer is I do not represent the Sandbox game or the Sandbox Foundation, which is the DAO. We are not your financial or legal advisors, and nothing I say is to be taken as financial or legal advice. When I say the word SIP, I mean Sandbox Improvement Proposal. When I say the word DAO, that means Decentralized Autonomous Organization. And when I say SANFAM, I'm talking about everyone in the Sandbox community who participates in the people, the product, and the purpose. The people being the gamers, game makers, voxel artists, landowners, sandholders, DAO delegates, participants in the Sandbox team. The product being the game client, box edit, game maker, the market, and the DAO, and the purpose being the what's explained in the white paper and by the various leaders of Sandbox, Seb, Arthur, Yat, and all of that churning together, making the ecosystem go round for the Sandbox. Scoreboard has been quiet as of late, mostly because the DAO admin team is working on bringing the delegation system online and approving the delegates to start doing delegate things. So as a result, there have been no new SIPs on draft or open for voting. And that means the checkbook hasn't moved either. So we're still sitting at 2.3% having been spent, which is 15% of the 15.5 million SAN budget. We're still at 211,000 token holders. We're at 15 proposals instead of 13, and there's 22,200 voters casting about 9,200 votes across those 15 proposals. My name is Lanzer. I am the podcast host for Sandow Podcast, which is a podcast all about the Sandbox DAO, bringing you educational and news updates. I'm also president of the Metaworlds group. We have published two experiences in the Sandbox. One is Floor Droppers, which is currently in Alpha Season 4 at 00. And the second one is Lava Defense, which is a Game Maker Fund 2023 project. My background is contract negotiation and program management. And I've been a creative entrepreneur, publishing novels to Amazon, music to iTunes, and games to the Sandbox and other things, but the Sandbox. So we're going to focus our discussion on two things that I mentioned in the beginning. There is Tech Talk with Win Airdrop, also goes by iHeartDomains, and there was a podcast. It was October 16th, so it was a few weeks ago, and he did a podcast with me and a guest, and it was called Exploring the Metaverse, Digital Identity, and Opportunities in Virtual Communities. So he and I did a podcast on Sandow not long before that, and It was podcast 29, and it was all about the digital identity as well, but spoken from the perspective of digital identity, from how does identity work within the Sandbox, and so on and so forth. Hey, Creator, how are you doing in the chat? Appreciate you stopping by. When the profile. So that right there is podcast 29, but then I went on his podcast to talk about his stuff for digital identity, and it went a lot different. So it wasn't a repeat. There were two totally different vantage points from identity, and mine was more from him asking questions about identity as it pertains to the sandbox, and then this one was about digital identity as a whole. And so you can find it on YouTube. We'll be referencing it a few times, but you can find his channel on YouTube, and it was called Exploring the Metaverse, Digital Identity, and Opportunities in Virtual Current Communities. That one right there. The second one was Forbes Web 3, which happened the day after on October, I believe it was October 17th. And that was the Builder Community Round 8. And the Builder Community Round 8 was with Manny and Jack from Forbes Web 3 team, where they interviewed Forbes Legacy Pass holders. And I happened to be one of them. And we talked about various things, and we'll go over that. So those are the two things that I'm going to go over, and all the surrounding characteristics that I noted. Okay, so let's do the first one. The tech talk with Win Airdrop. And that was done via Twitter Space. They both were, but this one was done via Twitter Space and later launched on his podcast, Spotify, YouTube, the whole thing. And we went through four big questions, myself and my co-guest. It was network, right? So network and I were both guests on the show. So there are four main questions. Question one was what they asked me was, how do you introduce a sandbox and how do you describe it? And I get this question a lot outside of the sandbox. I'm involved in a lot of different DAOs. I'm involved in many different Web3 communities. And when I say that I'm podcast host of SandDAO, which is about the sandbox DAO, the very first question I ask is, what is the sandbox? The second question I get asked is, what is a DAO? So what I basically come down to is, the way I answer this question was, I describe it as a Minecraft lookalike. It doesn't operate the same way, but it looks a lot like the Minecraft game, and it has a giant ecosystem behind it. And that's where I start going into the people, product, and the purpose. And the comparison I draw with Minecraft is that it's voxel art, and there's blocks that you can see. You can hit blocks. You can interact with your environment. You can build things, although not quite the same way in the sandbox. So I introduce it as, it looks like Minecraft. It has a Web3 blockchain foundation and a giant ecosystem of many different people, products, and purpose that puts it into the metaverse within the Web3 framework. Then I went into the history of the sandbox, and from 2012 to 2018, all the way to 2024, how in 2012 it was launched as a 2D mobile game. Then in 2018, it became a PC blockchain enabled game. And now in 2024, it's iterated on that quite a bit and now has a DAO. I then did a little bit of a comparison between Decentraland and Sandbox, and it was mainly my decision at the beginning how do I enter into the metaverse. I was the two that I narrowed it down to was Decentraland and Sandbox, and I ultimately chose the Sandbox, and I explained my reasons why in the question. It basically boils down to it had the gravitas. It had what I consider to be a sustainable model behind it. Decentraland had great graphics, and it had kind of a more fluid approach, whereas in Sandbox you have like servers that you join almost. So it had kind of that more metaverse feel, but the Sandbox to me had the backing and the structure to be successful and position itself in the market. So I ultimately chose the Sandbox. And then last we talked a little bit about how the Sandbox has some child protections that are important, kind of reminiscent of Minecraft a little bit in some ways, whereas other, I think Decentraland has a proximity chat, a voice chat and all that, some things that you'd have to keep an eye on. So that's how I introduced the Sandbox and how I described it. And here's a little excerpt from that.
How would you introduce them to it or to the Sandbox? Like, how do you describe this to them?
That's a great question. The way I normally describe it is sort of the way I introduced it in one of the penned tweets. I'd first describe it as Minecraft, because Minecraft was, for quite some time, the most viewed game on Twitch. So odds are people know what Minecraft is. Like the blocks, you hit the blocks, you build stuff. And that's a good start for describing it to someone who has no idea. And then you add the word. So it's a Minecraft-like game, and everything you see is built by someone or and added to the blockchain.
So that's basically the start of it. And I'm refining that a lot. At this point, I've been asked what is the Sandbox so many times in the Web3 ecosystem that I'm basically building a script that I can my go-to. And so I just explained to WinAirDrop the ingredients behind that. It's a Minecraft-like game on the blockchain, and there's a giant ecosystem that underpins it. So the second question was, what can you do and own in the Sandbox? And this is what really where he wanted to get to. WinAirDrop is very much into domain management. So identity is a big thing to him. And we talked about this a little bit on my podcast with him on Sandow. But on his podcast, he wanted to know, and his audience, I think there are about 50 people in his Twitter space. So what he wanted to know was, what can you do in the Sandbox and how does it relate to identity? So in this case, what can you do and own? And that's where I started going into how almost everything is an NFT and how you can almost own everything in the Sandbox. There's some peculiarities about how you don't have to mint everything you put in Game Maker or put on an experience. I didn't really get into that because it's nuanced that doesn't really make a difference to a crowd who's just being introduced to the Sandbox. Not important. What was important is explaining how everything, almost everything, can be an NFT that you mint, where it be, if you have a BAYC, then there's a bridge contract there, a bridge smart contract, I think, that allows you to use that as one of your avatars. You can mint swords that you swing and kill monsters with in an experience. That was the most important part of that question there. And here it is on his podcast.
Ask them in the bubble, but yeah, go for it, Lancer.
Yeah, some of the things that exist within the Sandbox that you can own and associate with identity, most of it is within the marketplace. When I dropped, I think I finally figured out how to do a pen thing. So I send out podcast number 31. If you want to get a little bit deeper into it, that's the intro to the Sandbox ecosystem, where I go into more depth into what you can do. But one of the other things I penned earlier, I was talking to you about the Sandbox ecosystem, where the people, product, purpose, and ecosystem picture. So some of the main things that you can do is, The many different layers that exist within the Sandbox, you can.
So I get into the different layers, and that's also part of another question that he asks. So all the things that you can do in the sandbox, most of them you can own that you interact with, whether it be the building or the car or the prop or the equipment or the level itself or the land, all most of it. Right? So the next question then was, what does identity look like in the sandbox? And that's where we started talking about usernames and how sandbox usernames are linked to wallets. And those, and also you can put in your social media on a sandbox username. And then those wallets can be linked to ENS, like mine can be, is linked to Lanzer.eth. And so if you know that, then you can see a lot of the reputation and blockchain history and all sorts of things. But also for the bridged avatars, especially from Bored Ape Yacht Club, World of Women, or Mocha, you have identities built within those universes that are now associated with the sandbox. So we go over that quite a bit.
There's, I think as I understood it, different types of identity. There's a username that is within the sandbox DAO ecosystem, which is actually bigger than just sandbox, as well as when it comes to like government and governance and voting and stuff like that. I believe that you guys still, you know, resolve and utilize ENS there. So kind of wanted to ask you, look like in the sandbox, kind of when each is used and how others interact with it. Specifically, I think it's kind of easier for us to figure out the ENS part, but wanted to talk specifically about the sandbox usernames, like kind of how you interact with it, what it's good for, used for, and are they on-chain, off-chain? Also, is there a second?
Yeah, I'll answer the first one first because I'll forget that one. So the secondary markets is OpenSea. They just announced Magic Eden's partnership and some blur some of the avatars. But so there is quite a bit of secondary market trading for the sandbox, especially when it comes to land. And specifically what it looks like is you have a mixture of on-chain and off-chain, and most of the off-chain is secondary stuff. So the on-chain is you create a username within the sandbox. So just like you would anywhere else in any other game. And that username is specific to the sandbox. However, where you start to connect identities across different layers of Web3 is you then associate that username with a wallet.
So there you have it. That was that question there. And while I'm talking, then after I talk, the network talks about his community called The Network, which I think aspires to be a metaverse game as well. And then the last question was a kind of general, what are you bullish on? And the thing that I talked about was the maturing of Web3. I mentioned this from time to time, but I've been in Web3. We didn't call it that back then, but I've been in cryptocurrency for almost 10 years now. And I've watched Web3. Back then, it was just cryptocurrency. I watched crypto mature into Web3 and progress from a more, I would use the word militant, a very aggressively, don't tread on me, I'm going to be anonymous, you don't have any right to know who I am, from that to where people weave their real life credentials into things, especially for the DAOs. So I've watched that go down, and I'm very, they call bullish, but I'm very optimistic about it. I like the way it's headed. And here it is on the podcast.
He's turning the floor over to you, Lander, sir.
I think the only thing I'd like to end with is that I've been kind of slow to reveal. I say that in 2016, back when a lot of the big scams were happening, like BitConnect and all that.
And here's where I talk about a little bit of my history, but I'm going to skip over this part because I cover it in Forbes Web 3.
I've watched the space evolve over the years, and it's been really fascinating to see how we've, in some cases, matured. In other cases, the space has turned into something much more, it's much less anonymous than what we originally set out to do. And we kind of learned, it's just like in life, that when you what you idealize it to be and what it turns out to be is very different things. And so with that comes a maturity, which you can choose to or not choose to. Like in the sandbox, you could still choose to be anonymous if you'd like, completely. You don't have to KYC if you don't want to. But there are certain things that the community is choosing to say, well, if you want to be anonymous, that's great, that's fine. But there are certain parts of things that we won't be able to trust you with because of the scale, the magnitude, and the severity of if it doesn't turn out to be what we thought it was.
So there you go. And that was a direct reference to the real life credentials that are being brought into the DAO when people want to ask for big dollar projects and show their resume to put some skin in the game and show people that they are real. They're not going to run away with this money. They're going to deliver on what they say they're proposing. And that right there was Tech Talk. It was really cool. I enjoyed it. It was a different podcast than what I'm used to in terms of Web3 space. Digital identity was its focus. So that was something that was new in how they approach it from a domain management. And so weaving in a game, a metaverse game, I had to focus on like the connection to ENS, the wallet, and the different identities that people have across different blockchains layers. And sometimes they don't all talk together or communicate well together, but you're able to make those linkages to where people can associate identities from Sandbox to Mocha to Bored Ape to whatever other communities people are part of. I liked it. I really liked talking to Marcus, who was Win Airdrop. And I think we'll probably be on each other's podcast again in the future, maybe an update on digital identity one way or the other. So the second one I did was Forbes. So Forbes has been doing what they call builder community Twitter spaces, X spaces. And this one was round number 8. And I got in on that one with Clubout, Michael, Ron, and myself. Unfortunately, both of these rugged. So we did do them. They were recorded and done, but you can't listen to them, and neither can I, because it rugged and there's a problem, and so it's lost. It's lost now. I've tried everything I could to download it to listen to it, but it's not possible. So both of them. So the first one rugged, they restarted it, and then that one, I can't access that one either. So unfortunately, I can't show anything from it. However, it happened. We did it. And here I have some notes on what exactly I said. So there were 4 questions that were asked. And the first one was a basic background and introduction. And I liked this one a lot because Manny and Jack sent out read aheads. So they sent out a PDF with here's the agenda, here's the questions you can expect to prepare for. So I had some time to think about how I wanted to do this. And I knew this one was going to be well attended. This one had over 90 people in it. So it's Forbes. It's Forbes Web3. So it attracted a lot of attention. And I was very happy to do this. So the first question was background and introduction, where they said, let's start by hearing from each of you. What were you doing before Web3 and what brought you into the space? So what I explained was that before Web3, what I did, quote unquote, was kind of, it's been, you can segment it into 3 or 4 different buckets. There's my professional life, my gaming life, and my creative entrepreneurship life. So my professional life, I mentioned in the beginning when I did my introduction, I write and wrote contracts. And negotiated them for about 13 years. So I bought everything from pens to airplanes. And I negotiated with Fortune 100 companies. I've signed many, many million-dollar contracts. And now I'm currently a program manager for a fleet of aircraft, and that program value is over $1 billion. And so I have a lot of experience in legalese stuff and negotiation stuff, cost, schedule, performance things, leading teams toward product and services, and that sort of stuff. So that's my first bucket. My second bucket is my gaming life, where, and I linked some of these things. I started podcasting in 2016 when I looked back to see when my first one was. Before I click this, it is so embarrassing, but what I've come to rest on for myself is that if I can look back on some of these old things and cringe, that to me is a good sign that I'm learning. I think I've matured since then, and it is cringy. I can barely look at it and read it or listen to it anymore. But podcasting 2016, I started with esports. My podcasting endeavor when I was part of a very esports centric group called the Esports Professionals Network, and one of them I did was on gender leagues, if you can believe it. Even back then, gender leagues was a thing in esports, where there were, I mean, you could tell the disparity, you could see the difference in the way it was attended, the way it was funded, the way it was promoted. And so we, for EPN, we did a podcast on that. An atmosphere. This is Isabel Davies. There's also Carly Morgan. And they're talking about their observations in gender leagues within the esports, whether it be MLG or ESA. Electronic Sports, or ESL, Electronic Sports League.
Yeah, I mean, Isabel absolutely nailed it. And this whole cross-examining thing that she talks about is what I refer to as the gauntlet of justification, where before a woman can even dedicate her time and energies and attention to playing a game effectively at the highest level of competitive skill, she has to face this barrage of questions about why she's playing and demonstrating her knowledge of the game and a very highly literate understanding of the game mechanics and the metagame.
So even then, podcasting, you can tell, very, very early version of my production quality. I've since upgraded. But that's how I started out. You can see kind of like a green screen in the background and then a blackout sheet in front of a window. I've got my boom mic with a cardioid up there, which is single directional, whereas now I have an omnidirectional mic. Different things I've learned along the way to pick up, and now I've got lighting in the background, a little bit of depth to it and shadow. I've only learned to do that because, well, I've been doing it since 2016, and I think I've published how many? 70? About 70 podcast episodes at this point. Yeah, so I started out podcasting in 2016, and then I also was involved in a bit of esports governance. So that would be, I kind of put my contract writing background to use there, and I devised a kind of like a UN of esports. We called it the Electronic Sports Republic, and I basically crafted a whole business plan for, with an executive summary, a structure, how the different parts of the league would function. And it's basically a way to work out how voting works and non-voting branches, almost like a DAO. Looking back on it, you can see the different assemblies and I wrote up a bunch of bylaws and how they would contribute to the regulations. And I spent a lot of time on this thing. So much time. We didn't end up implementing it. But then all of this ended up being foundation for later things in life. So it was great experience late either way. And it was back in 2016 I wrote this. So yeah, so this right here, you could probably apply to a DAO nowadays and the way it's written and works. And there's a charter and whole bunch of stuff. Even conflict of interest. Input conflict of interest I just saw in there. Different responsibilities. So I was in podcasting, esports governance, content creation. So I was pretty big into the PlanetSide 2 MMO FPS. If you don't know what PlanetSide 2 is, it's kind of like Call of Duty or Battlefield, but instead of 50 players on one side, there's 5,000 players on one side. There are three sides fighting at the same time on a map that is like 20 miles big, and then the match never stops. So you're constantly fighting over territory, and the game never ends. And so I did quite a bit of content creation.
Fighting off against something. Good player base. Looks like a-
good days. Good times. It was so much fun playing that game. But I've since cooled down from that for about a year now because of the way the game has started winding down. And so my motivation and my ability to play it has winded down as well. Although, you know, we could always go back to it. It's still there. It's just not, you know, there's no longer 5,000 players playing on each side anymore. It's much, much lower, like under 1,000 total versus 15,000. So a lot's changed since then. But this one was only 2 years ago. In any case, did content creation for a game. And then I'd say my greatest achievement was co-founding a community-led organization that ended up breaking a Guinness World Record. I am so happy and proud of our team that we accomplished this because it was a huge achievement. So just co-founding the group itself, which is kind of like a cross between American NFL and American ESPN. So it was like we created the tournament matches and we broadcasted them live. And we've done, I think we did maybe 50 or 70 matches at this point with over 400 players attending. And one day, and it's still alive. I just retired from the leadership of it. But back in 2015, we decided, what if we try and break a Guinness World Record? And we did. We organized over 1,000 players to break the record, and we helped set the match. And then we broadcasted it, and I have a plaque from Guinness World Records with a special mention, PlanetSide Battles. So the game company itself was made by Sony Online Entertainment, so it's a subsidiary of Sony. I helped co-founded PlanetSide Battles, which is a player-led organization with the game and PlanetSide Battles. We got a special mention as organized. So, yeah, it was cool. It was cool. And
you know, Kappa,
over 1,000 players playing all together, which is not hard for the game to make, which is why it was kind of easy to just, you know, break the record. It was just like another day for PlanetSide. We just had to make sure that it was recorded properly by the Guinness World Record folks.
Holds attack on. We thought there's no way the NC are going to get this back. And somehow they've done it two or three different times.
Yeah. Yes, they have. And so we have another situation like that right now at TACON Storage where, yes, they are entrenched, but don't let that show anything right now because the NC have done a fantastic job.
Okay, they finally...
Oh, good times. Good times. So we broke a Guinness World Record with a player-led community that we co-founded, and it still runs today. The game still holds a record today, too. So that's my gaming life. Professional life, gaming life, and then my creative entrepreneurship life, which I've written novels, and I've published them to Amazon. You can find them in Boston Public Library, on Walmart, and Barnes & Noble. And then I used to be a classical composer turned house music, and I created some house tracks and published them on iTunes. And then my latest was eventually games to Sandbox, which there we are, right in the middle. Floor Droppers. So right now we are in 0-0 in the Sandbox, Alpha Season 4. Right there in the middle. So, pretty cool accomplishment. I'm so happy and proud of the team. So that was the first part of the question, which was, what were you doing before Web3? And then the second part of the question was, what brought you into the space? And what brought me into the space was in 2015, there were a number of articles about Bitcoin. Bitcoin was all the rage back then. Ethereum, I don't think Ethereum, when did Ethereum start? Hey, thanks, Sansquat. Timio, thank you so much for the raid. How are you doing? 2015, there you go. So this was just after Ethereum was created, 2015. So I was reading articles in December of 2015, I think it was. Maybe even before that, I can't remember now. But articles like these, which it was all about Bitcoin. Should you invest in Bitcoin? And then there were arguments in favor of it. There's so many things that you read now, you're like, duh, of course it is. But back then, we didn't know. We didn't know. We just were reading stuff and trying to figure out what it meant. And so Forbes came out with articles like this years ago. And I had been reading Forbes since I was 15 years old. So I caught that article too. And also Business Insider. Most of them were talking about Bitcoin. And back then it was Bitcoin, Litecoin, Ethereum, Ripple. And there might be one or two other big ones. I can't recall right now. But Ethereum, Litecoin, Bitcoin, Ripple were the big ones. So what brought me in were the articles that kind of explained what it was about. And we didn't really know. We didn't have DAOs. We didn't have anything like that. So we just knew that it was a coin that you could have on your computer and it was worth some money. And maybe you could mine it if you wanted to, but there was a lot to understand about it. So I got in about 2015. And yeah, so I'm an old geezer at this point when it comes to Bitcoin. All right, so the next part was question number two. What was your path to Web3? What was the turning point or motivation that led you to dive into Web3? And for me, that second question there in red meant that they meant to ask it, but they didn't. So because of, you know, how many people were there and the rugging and all sorts of stuff, they just stuck with the first part of the question. So that first part was, what was the turning point and the motivation that led me to diving into Web3? The turning point was in 2017 when a whole bunch of lending platforms started coming out. And you all have probably heard some of these memes before. But the BitConnect scam, the Control Finance scam, the OneCoin scam, the big push on referral links, which was is closely related to what people call undisclosed payments and shilling now. But there were a lot of suspicious promises of high interest payouts. Most of it ended up being Ponzi schemes and scams. And a lot of YouTube videos were coming out of people promoting these things, what we call shilling now. Shilling's kind of changed since then, but back then it was real shilling where people would be like, hey, buy this coin. It'll go up real, real fast. Or, hey, join this lending platform because it's going to promise you 20% return every day. It's like these things were very suspicious and in most cases unrealistic. So I just saw too many videos of that. And I needed to provide a counterbalance because if you have any, I mean, if you're an investor of any kind, you know, stock payouts and those numbers, it just wasn't making sense. So I started a YouTube channel to provide some clarity and to fact check a lot of these lending platforms that claimed you're going to get 2% a day. And my biggest one was BitConnect, which ended up making it on The Daily Show with John Oliver after he took over from Jon Stewart. And this is the segment from 6 years ago.
But remember, the market was soaring and BitConnect had excited investors like this guy who spoke at one of the conferences.
Hey, hey, hey. What's so,
let me tell you that we are really changing the world as we know it. The world is not anymore the way it used to be. No. Be connected!
Wow!
Yeah, so it was like that back then. And and what I did was I did videos where I was a fact checker. And so I would put together these Excel documents that would track how the money went from payout to bank account. And so if you know anything about CoffeeZilla, I was like a pre-released alpha version of him. And so BitConnect, Control Finance, OneCoin, so the OneCoin era, which was a multi-billion dollar scam where I think her name was Crypto Queen. She's still on the run after that. But one of the co-founders was sentenced to 20 years in prison. One of the main organizers for BitConnect was just sentenced earlier this year in California to, I think, 3 years in prison. So it's taken a while for them all to get caught and put in justice served, but it is happening. And so referral links were big thing there. And I didn't push referral links. I saw those danger as red flags big time early on. And I think that saved me big time because I was making videos about these things, about these opportunities, let's call them, that end up being Ponzi schemes and scams. And I would not push any of the referral links because it was too suspicious to me. And this is what that looked like back then.
As of today, I have not posted or had a website. The problem is that the referral system is not an accurate representation of what these crypto investment opportunities are offering. And instances where referral gets rather than where it should be, which is a natural reward for showing other people that this opportunity is available of their time. My desire is to increase the frequency that I test new crypto investment opportunities.
This was way back then. 2017 feels like a lifetime ago. And I was pushing out these videos, specifically the fact checker videos, and that's what I was mostly known for.
The total interest payout was $29,000, which was about $1,500 lower than the advertised raw amount. The highest payout was $485.62. That occurred on...
That's the big, huge spreadsheet that I put together to track how all the money went. And most of them didn't live up to what they said they were going to pay out. And it became so obvious when you just track the money. They said they were going to pay this out. You only got this amount. And then by the time it got to your wallet, it was even less than that. So that's what this was. All I did was just track everything. And I streamed it. I put it on YouTube. And it became a hit. It became a big hit. So a lot of people were able to watch my videos and see what the realities were behind these huge crypto lending platforms that end up becoming scams. But at the time, people could only speculate because at the time they all touted this secret trading bot algorithm and no one had ever seen these trading bots, but these are the first time these things had kind of come out. So most people thought that it was plausible because trading bots, like the old gun bot, trading bots were a big thing back then. Trading bots is basically a computer program that buys you that trades on an exchange for you, spots uptrends and buys, spots downtrends and sells. So, or vice versa, depending on your strategy and what your goals were. So these lending platforms came out promising high returns using trading bots that they say that they did wonders for and created things for. And so I did this tracker, which tracked the real return on investment if you were to invest money in it. And I did that across many different lending platforms. So yeah, that was what changed the game and brought me back into crypto after dabbling in it starting in 2015-ish timeframe. And like I said, I was an early version of CoffeeZilla, and coincidentally enough, CoffeeZilla, who's a world famous scam investigator, he recently got into crypto a couple years ago, scam investigating because of how much scam there is going on in crypto. And he's been on Lex Friedman. He's been on Joe Rogan. So he's really well known. But I was very, very much an early version of him. Whereas he kind of tells a story. He's like a narrative storyteller. And me, I'm more of an analytical fact checker. And I bring the numbers to bear. And I'm showing the numbers of it promised 5%. It only gives you 0.2% in reality. I felt much more comfortable weaving the numbers together and calculating Excel formulas to show what really happens versus kind of storytelling on what I think was happening, because most of us didn't know what was happening. Most of us didn't know how to interpret it. You could call it a scam if you wanted to, but you really didn't know. Nobody did. Not until one of them got indicted by court system in Texas and the whole thing imploded. Another one got indicted by, I think, the European Union or subpoenaed. And then that one collapsed, and then they all started toppling after that because people started turning their attention and their scrutiny to it. And that's kind of where FUD came from, by the way. A lot of FUD came out of stuff like that. But we'll talk about the dark history of FUD in a different slide. So anyways, it was CoffeeZilla. And this was CoffeeZilla, coincidentally, interviewing someone who was very important in the BitConnect community, Trevon James. He ended up getting indicted by the SEC. And Trevon James, one of the ways I found out about BitConnect. So when I say people making videos about BitConnect and all the stuff that they were doing to promote, this is one of those people. And his name was Trevon James. And CoffeeZilla interviewed him to try and confront him a little bit about why he did what he did and all that. And it was just interesting to see things. And this was only 3 years ago. So he did this 2021 when all this stuff happened in 2017. And so Coffee interviewed him, someone who I had seen around in BitConnect community while it was all happening. He was one of the biggest promoters. But you listen to this part.
I'm not a genius when it comes to crypto. You're gonna have to accept that. But I did some digging into you, obviously, prior to this interview. Mm. So Trevon was one of the biggest promoter of BitConnect.
I was the biggest. Don't try to
not down Carlos Matos. I thought it was Matos.
No, Carlos. Okay.
Carlos Matos, by the way, was the one we just showed. It was like BitConnect. Okay, that's the meme about BitConnect. That's Carlos Matos. This is Trevon James.
Carlos was very
so low. You screwed over a lot of people. A lot of people left with the bag. A lot of people losing a ton of money. I'm just going to be real with you.
There you go. So as you can see, CoffeeZilla, pretty hard hitting. And whereas I stuck to more of the quantity stuff, what I could prove via numbers, he talked more about the narrative of it. And he's been much more successful than I, whereas I was like a very, very early version. And I netted some tens of thousands of views, but he nets millions. So I'm pretty, for the most part, I really enjoy Coffee and what he does. So anyways, there's that. And so that was the question number two, your path to Web3. Then there was question number three, which is current focus in Web3. What are you currently focused on building or contributing to within the Web3 space? And all I did was talk about how I'm president of MetaWorlds. I go over that with my disclaimers, the Sandow podcast and the different experiences, Lava Defense, which is GameMaker 2023. It's still there, but it's not like a huge hit versus Floor Droppers, which has many thousands of plays now. And then all of our proposals that we put together At this point, we put together 8. And Sandow Podcast, which as of today is 36 episodes. We've done 36 episodes for Sandow Podcast. So cool. The content really just makes itself. I love this. And then I talked about how does my previous work, how does my previous experiences inform your current work? I do mention this anyways, even though they didn't ask the question. I tend to look at project founders and how public they are a little bit more so because of what I just went through and went through with the lending platforms, scams and implosions. So I look at the founders a little bit more. And if you go back to some of my videos for cryptocurrency fact-checking, you can see how I investigate the website and how I note the red flags along the way and how it's just some of them were, they didn't hide it very well. Some of them, you could easily tell they were not prepared. They were not either truthful or just things weren't adding up. And how if you were looking at it with a reasonable eye, you would not want to invest in some of those things. So then we went on to, and that's what I did to Sandbox. I looked at how public they were. So Seb is super public, goes to all the conferences. Arthur Madrid, you can find videos on him easy, dating back many years. And then what the community says about it, if you hear a lot of bad and good, that's usually a good sign to me. If you hear nothing but good, there's something probably there you need to dig up. Because that's where the dark history of FUD will come into play, and we'll talk about that afterwards. But if you only hear great things and how great it is, you need to dig deeper. If you hear good and bad, then you're probably on the right track. If you only hear bad, then you probably need to be careful. Because maybe there is a good reason why everyone's talking bad about it. But it also could just be subject to the whim of the Twitter mob and the crypto mob. Sometimes it very unfairly attacks something, like our friends over at Bankless Media, the way I just was introduced to them through podcasting. And I hope to do an interview with them in the future. And the Bankless DAO, which is now, I think, called Black Flag DAO. But in any case, the controversy of Arbitrum, it seemed like it was very unfairly directed at Bankless Media and Bankless DAO. But we'll see in the future when we interview, if we do. And so, you know, look at what the community says. And then look at the product. In this case, for Sandbox, when I did my own little inspection of the Sandbox, right away, you can see all sorts of stuff. Product, there's a game, you can download, you can get assets, you can buy things, you can, in the About section, you can look at all the documentation, and you can see trailers, like it's a built product. You could even see who the owners are. There's all sorts of stuff that is easily traceable if you wanted to. Very different from 2017 when most of these things were incorporated in countries that didn't do much verification, and so that was already suspect. And so my experience there brought me a lot of tools that I use and a lot of things I use to judge projects by. And then question number 4, join the Forbes Web3 community. What made you decide to join Forbes Web3 community, and what do you hope to gain or contribute through your involvement? And for me, it was a no-brainer with the legacy pass. Forbes has been in the Web2, even the Web1 world for a long time. Forbes, to me, I saw this as a good faith effort by Forbes to dip their toes in. And we since learned in one of their latest Twitter feeds or Twitter spaces about DAOs, coincidentally enough, how Manny has a team of 10 and they're fully committed. They're not just dipping their toes in. They have a whole department of Web3 that is dedicated to Web3 and Legacy Pass and the furtherance of integrating into Web3. So I see it as a good faith effort by them. I don't think they're going to rug. And for me, I want to be a voice of integrity and progress. I want to help build things. I want to talk about the things that we can do well in, that we do well in. I want to talk about the things that we could do better in. To me, it's not about FUD, and we're about to get into that, how that dark history is just taking on a whole thing of its own within crypto that I really dislike. But you can talk good about things and you can talk bad about things, and both are important. So I want to apply my professional skill toward the DAOs, specifically to the Sandbox DAO, because I'm so invested into it. And I'm going to be running for Sandbox Special Counsel. What I wanted to talk about next was one of the reasons why I'm having this podcast. It's not just to talk about what I talked about at these podcasts. There are some best practices and some things I've learned along the years, and especially now that I'm becoming more involved in DAOs, more in leadership and governance and all sorts of stuff. I want to share some interesting stuff that I've come across that I think could be useful to know. Take it for what you will. This is just my opinion. I certainly don't know everything. So there's some best practices for going on podcasts. And at this point, like I said, I've been doing it since 2016. And I've been on and I published maybe 80, 90 podcasts at this point. So best practice when going on podcasts in Web3. Just stick to Web3. Okay. First thing is disclose your status. It might be embarrassing, or you might feel that people are going to call you out up front, but I promise you, if you disclose your status, it's going to go far better for you than if people find out you have a conflict of interest later and you didn't. Trust and reputation is instantly damaged if you fail to disclose your status. And sometimes we're all so interconnected. Don't have like this huge laundry list, just the thing that is applicable to you at the time. So for me, one of my favorite disclosures is that I'm a Sandbox community member. I'm not a Sandbox employee. I'm not part of the Sandbox DAO admin team. It's important that I disclose that, because sometimes the way I talk, it can be construed as authority, or that I speak on behalf of someone. I speak on behalf of myself. I don't speak on behalf of the DAO, or I don't speak on behalf of the Sandbox Game Company. I speak as a community member. I'm podcasting as a community member. That is, at this point, I've said it so much, it feels very comfortable to me to say that. And I make that disclosure on almost every podcast I go on, especially if I can remember to. It's important. If you are talking about someone and they are paying you, or they're your best friend, disclose that. It will go far better for you in the long run, I promise. The second thing is always disclose if you're being paid for your efforts. In some industries, you're required to, and it would be illegal for you not to, especially in marketing. YouTubers sometimes get in trouble for this when they're being paid to sponsor programs, but they don't disclose that. YouTube and everyone, Twitch has cracked down on that a lot. But for you all in crypto, it sometimes it can be kind of obscure who's really paying who, if they're being paid at all. So if you are receiving payments or there's a conflict of interest somewhere, disclose that. The latest thing for me was the ApeCoin DAO, where I help authored an AIP that's currently going up for vote. And we call it the reset bill, to give clarity and transparency and empower the special counsel. There is there is a different bill that's gone up called the revamp bill. It looks to dissolve the special counsel. So whenever I comment on that thread, I disclose that I am also the author of this other bill, which wants to continue the special counsel. This bill wants to remove the special counsel. It just works better. I find that people take it on better, and that there's more trust that's built up front versus later on them finding out, oh, you were such an advocate for it, or you're really against it, and then you had a personal connection to it some way. So disclose your conflicts of interest and your undisclosed payments up front. It'll go better for you. All right, so the next thing. Words that use words that a majority of people are going to know. You might think you're sounding really smart or that you gain a lot of credibility by using all of these nice big words, but in the vast majority of times, you are you're just confusing people. And while they might think that you know what you're talking about, I don't think they're going to fully trust you. And this is just my sense, like I said, my opinion. In the end, the people who can communicate more clearly are the people that people listen to mostly. So use words that people know. And that's why I say, and you heard earlier when I showed some of the podcasts for Tech Talk, that I use things like Sandbox is like Minecraft. People know what Minecraft is. So many more people know what Minecraft is than know what Sandbox is. So when you try and give them a picture of something they know and trust already because they have firsthand use of it, you use things they already know, like Minecraft. And instead of saying a metaverse game, most people don't even know what metaverse is. When you say metaverse, people think of Ready Player One, and they think of Facebook's VR headset. So use Minecraft-like. It tells them where they are in their brain. Instead of saying Sandbox Game Community, instead of saying SandFam, say Sandbox Game Community. It puts words together that they can associate with. Sandbox being the thing you just told them about. Game being a game they play. And the community being a social network of people. Instead of saying SandFam. So I say the Sandbox family, we call ourselves SandFam. It's basically a Sandbox game community. Done. Easy. Instead of saying Vox editor, say artist. People know what artists are. Instead of saying game maker, say level designer. People know what level designers are because of game development. They don't know what a game maker is. It's too nebulous. Maybe a maker of games like EA Sports. Maybe, but most of the time you're talking about the person who installed the Game Maker program using Vox art to weave together a level. Level designer. Just say that. And then digital real estate. Say that word instead of land. Landowner has too many different places it could go. So if you say digital real estate, that puts you in a very, very particular box that you can then build on and explaining what a landowner is. And instead of saying Web3, most people don't know what Web3 is. Even crypto people, those who have been in the game since 2008 when the white paper launched, I think, or when I went in and the bull run of 2015, I didn't know what Web3 was until earlier this year. Web3 is a new concept, a brand new concept. Most people don't know what Web3 is, even in the crypto space. So if you say things like the next version of the internet, then they start to place where it is in the terminology and the vocabulary and the framework. Again, this is all just my opinion based on my experience. Take it or leave it, no problem. And then let's get into translating terminology. So this is more particular to us in SandFam and Web3. You got to translate terminology. Not just to Web2 people, but also to other Web3 people. Let's first talk about the word rug. So rug is a term I had never heard before until the last couple years. Before, we used to, even crypto people. That's the way I should put this. So translate new Web3 terminology to old crypto people. Rug. We used to say the word scam. Okay, rug was not a thing back then. I did start hearing the word, people got rugged. I think it was a rug pull, right? People used to be rug pulled, maybe 2020, 2019, but still really, really new. Back then, it was just a scam. Okay, so the word alpha. Alpha is getting the 411 or getting the scoop on things. I had no idea what the word alpha was until I heard it earlier this year. I had to have someone explain it to me. Okay, whale. Whale has been around for a while. All right, so I know what whale was. They were using whale even back then. It's a high net worth individual. Okay. Mooning. So mooning used to be called to the moon. right? So go to the moon. And that used to be called that because not just of a crypto thing going up, but also when Dogecoin was put on a rocket somewhere and it was at the moon, or it was a whole thing. But mooning is like a verb now, I guess. And it means that it's going to go up. So price increase. Meme coin. That one's been around for a while. But when you're trying to explain it to a Web 2 person, it's a popularity coin based on a fad. So that's how I explain it to a Web 2 person. Shill. Shill to me has been taken too far nowadays. Shill used to be properly called when you called someone when they were an excessive promoter of things. So most of the time when you're in Telegram or Discord or YouTube comments or a YouTube video, a shill was a person who would pop in there and copy paste 10 messages and say, buy X coin because it's going up 2,000% in the next 2 hours. Hurry before it gets there. So that's the whole get in early thing that you all hear about nowadays. That's where it came from. Shill was a person who did that too much. Way too much. An excessive promoter of things. All right. Nowadays, I hear that people call shill like you would call someone stupid. Hey, you're stupid. I think it's silly to me. I got called a shill once for posting a 1 hour interview on a Discord channel or in a Twitter feed. I think it was related to what we were talking about in the X space. Someone called me a shill. And I'm like, really, dude, you have no idea what that word means if you're calling me a shill. A well thought out interview of thought and long form content. That's ridiculous. But shill, that's what it means. An excessive promoter. Then you start getting into kind of the acronym soup. FOMO. Failure, fear? Fear of missing out. FOMO, so fear of missing out. NFA, that's a new one. People use NFA. The word itself isn't, so not a financial advice, has been around for a long time, but no one called it NFA. It's like the whole kind of new age crypto, Web3 people doing acronyms of things. So NFA. First of all, I don't ever recommend you use that, because just saying the word NFA doesn't say not financial advice. It's definitely not something that's going to help you if you ever end up in court. To say, oh, I said the word NFA. Don't. To use the word not financial advice. WAGME? I did not know what that one was. I had to look it up. We're all going to make it. We're all going to make it. WAGME. And then FUD. Let's talk about FUD. FUD is a term that started out dark. So FUD, I really saw FUD in 2016 when I started doing the fact-checking videos. Some of my stuff was called FUD. And the reason why, not just my stuff, but I was in Telegram stuff, with different Telegram groups as a fact-checker, but at different Telegram groups, different circles, because while I was fact-checking, I was buying into some of these things to fact check how it all went down. But part of that brought me into circles where I witnessed people weaponize the word FUD against other crypto people. And most of the time, those other crypto people were just asking a question about what something was. Or they came in and say, hey, what is this? This kind of looks weird. And then the admin of the Telegram group would ban that person and then just start a shit rant on them, just start ranting about them. Someone who just asked a question about something. And so FUD was used as kind of like a banhammer term to boot someone out and all of these different Ponzi schemes. So to protect their community, they would ban newcomers who expressed anything other than, I don't know, Kim Jong-un style adherence to their plan or their persona or their whatever. So if you fell out of line, you got FUDded. And so FUD has this dark history, in my view, of crypto people weaponizing that against other crypto people. And most of them were reasonable. Some of them weren't. Some of them were trolls. We call them grifter nails, I guess. But FUD was a bad term to me. It was a term to weaponize against people who reasonably brought in uncertainty, brought in doubt. The fear thing, I think, is just kind of an acronym. There wasn't much fear that I saw. The only fear I saw were the people who are the admins afraid of losing their credibility for other people who walked in and say, hey, this thing doesn't make any sense. You can't be promising 10% a day. And people are like, that's FUD, and then ban them. So whenever someone accuses someone else of FUD, I kind of have a moment, because it had this really dark history of being weaponized against other crypto people by crypto people hoping to retain their power or to retain their influence and don't let their credibility be questioned. Whereas now, that's not good for DAOs. FUD is not a phrase I want to hear people use against other people in DAOs, because in DAOs, you really do have millions on the line of people who invested, who are credible reputation people. And it is our place to question things. So someone used that term against me long ago, and I didn't say much about it. I kind of just like, okay, I understand where you're coming from, but I can start to see it creep back in the DAO space of some people calling other people FUD. And for me, the banhammer didn't, in 2016, 2017, when all this went down, the banhammer wasn't soon thereafter. They were exiled from the community. And I wonder at people using that phrase, not realizing the dark history it has. So I haven't seen the bans happen on the DAOs yet, but people start calling other people FUD, FUDing, or FUDders, and then it's just, trust me, then you don't have to trust me. You can go back in time and see how FUD was used against other crypto people. I don't like it. I don't like the way the term's used, and it's a dangerous thing. You just call someone a FUD, and then you put this stink on them that isn't, most of the time, I don't think half the time, it's deserving. So there you go. So finished with that portion. And let's move to the second part of the slide. So things I learned, not just being on advertisement, things I learned, not just being on podcasts, but through my own podcasting. Here's some things I learned. When you start sounding like a walking advertisement, as is sometimes I do when I'm on a podcast talking about Sandbox, I talk about all the great things it is. Don't be afraid to reiterate your disclosure. Here's an example of me doing that on Tech Talk. I think when Airdrop and Network mentioned, you know, their kids, Sandbox is of the two, the more kid-friendly version, you know, just the way it looks and then the way it's moderated and protected. So there's no voice chat that you might find in Call of Duty where you have to police your kids and that sort of thing. There are in-game moderators that kind of check to make sure that conduct is healthy. And so they kind of police that a little bit more so. And so it looked to me the most inviting of the two. And then the ecosystem behind it was just enormous. So that's the way I kind of introduced the Sandbox. I'm by no means a spokesperson for the Sandbox. Like I said, I'm just a community member. I'm someone who's passionate about, existing. I own land, so I've bought land. I've published experiences, like little mini games, to the Sandbox that people can play. And I believe in the vision and the mission of it. And I want to be a productive community member to where we make it better. So when I was responding to the questions, I started to sound like a walking advertisement. It was like, Sandbox is great. Here's all the stuff we can do. And there was a point in time when I felt it was needed for me to reiterate my disclosure that, again, I'm not a Sandbox employee. I'm not a DAO person. I'm just a community member. I'm just someone who is here. I'm passionate. And then here's the next part. Don't be afraid to admit something you think should be improved. Like, that's where the FUD fear comes in, where people are afraid to be labeled FUD. I'm past that. I'm way past that. If I don't agree with something, especially in the DAO space, I now bring it up because I've seen what happens when you don't. And I don't want that. I don't want to see that in our community, in the Sand Fam. So I admit when I think something should be improved. And also, don't be afraid to reinforce that you do not have any undisclosed payments. Here's that too. A sandbox person. This is just me telling you my experience and my interactions with it. And I'm not making anything from this either. those interaction layers, so I go into the whole thing about interaction layers of the ecosystem. But say when you start sounding like a walking advertisement, which is not hard to do when talking about the sandbox and how great things are, there's three things at your disposal when it comes to your reputation, your credibility, or people's trust in you and what you're saying. You can reiterate your disclosure. You can mention things that, hey, just because it is really, really cool, there's also this that you have to watch out for. That to me is a healthy amount of, that's a healthy thing to say. And then reiterate that you're not being paid for. And if you are, reiterate that you are being paid. That sort of reminder, I think, is a good protective element for both you and Sandbox, because it tells people, here's what it is, and here's why I'm saying it, and that why can sometimes be really, really important to the listener. The other thing I learned operating in the space is most people don't know what the Sandbox is. They might have heard the word the Sandbox and somehow associate it with a game. Most people don't know what it is. So when you explain it to them, explain it in terms they understand. Like, it looks like Minecraft. It's on the blockchain. All these different terms they do know. Okay? Most people associate Metaverse with Ready Player One and Facebook VR. So if you don't remember Ready Player One, it was that really cool game. It was a really cool movie that got a lot of hype. Looked like this.
Mean anything? The Oasis was the brainchild of James Halliday.
Hello. If you're watching this, I'm dead. I created a hidden object, an Easter egg.
And then there's all sorts of gamer stuff going on.
Control of
a lot of cool references.
The Oasis.
Halo and the old robot movie from our childhood. But most people think when you say Metaverse, they think Ready Player One movie, and they think Facebook VR headset, neither of which applies to the Sandbox. So you just have to understand that that's usually what they're thinking when you say Metaverse game. And so when I describe it with that in mind, and then I kind of redirect the language to say, it looks like Minecraft, actually. You play it on your computer. You integrate with the blockchain with NFTs. When you swing a sword, you're swinging an NFT on the blockchain. That sort of stuff. And then when you're talking to a Web 2 audience or even a Web 1 audience, most of the time I found that they have a negative or neutral perception of blockchain, NFTs, and cryptocurrency. There's just too much mainstream media that we'll call it a scam, the whole thing a scam, or a gambling. I hear that a lot, that it's gambling. And whether it be John Oliver at The Daily Show, or even not so much Forbes, but used to be Forbes, and you'll still find old articles on, you know, CNN or Business Insider, really well-known, respected journals, will have a lot of what we used to call FUD. There's that term again. And you could see how complicated that term can get. But most Web 2 people have a negative or neutral perception of our industry in Web 3. So that negative publicity is something you have to either address or talk clearly through. The more you start talking about layer 1 and layer 2 and Polygon versus Ethereum and this fight they had and whatever, All right. What they're worried about is, if I invest in this thing, is it going to lose me money? Why should I even get involved in this thing? Digital property ownership. Why is that important to me? The way Yatsu describes digital property ownership in his TED Talk, I've showed that in a previous podcast, is phenomenal. To me, I'm taking notes on how to describe it in a way where you look at your doom scrolling on TikTok as you're giving labor to the algorithm of TikTok. You're giving them free data, which they then turn around and sell and monetize. You're not getting paid for that at all. Whereas Web3, it turns that around. You're able to start making money off of your efforts, your play to earn sort of thing, play and earn. So the negative publicity around the scams and the fear around the regulatory things with the SEC and the Wells notices and the Howey tests, all of that creates a negative or neutral perception of the Web3. So that's just something that's a fact. It's just known whenever you operate in those audiences that they will, that's what you're talking around. Okay. And so how do I describe the sandbox? My most recent explanation was likening it to a mall. And I came up with that one kind of on the fly during Tech Talk, and I really liked it. So I wrote it down so that I can explain it that way in the future, but it went a little bit like this.
That's the very first thing is what you play on is owned by someone. So like your building, when you walk into a building in a mall, that mall is owned by someone who owns the land. The mall that you walk into, the building, was built by someone, most of which is minted on the blockchain somewhere. So the tree that you're looking at, doesn't have to be, but a lot of the times it's an asset on the blockchain. The chair that you sit down on, or the walls that you see, all of it was built by someone. And if they choose to, they can mint that on the blockchain. Then also the sword that you swing, or the shoes that you wear, all the equipables, the props. Those were designed by an artist who could, if they choose, also mint that on the blockchain. And so you have these different interaction layers. Even the avatar that you walk around with, like I mentioned earlier, World of Women or 48 Yacht Club. If you have any of those avatars, a number of them have I don't remember what they call them, like a bridge, where if you join the sandbox game, a lot of these avatars that you have, odds are you can probably use at least one of them free, so you're not paying anything extra.
So there, I described it like a mall where the land is owned by someone, the stores, so the experiences are owned by someone, what is built around, the buildings or the equipment or the assets are all built by someone. And so I described it like that. And I think I'm gonna make it better, but I like the way it came across. So I'll probably use that term again. And then the next thing is I describe it as an ecosystem. And nowadays I have a slide on it. So this slide, oops, too zoomed in. So this slide right here, the people, product, purpose. I go over this every slide, every podcast now since podcast 31, where I introduced it. But it's new. Before, I was just talking it through, and now I have a visual to show people. So the ecosystem, I talk about how there are multiple types of people and career fields within the sandbox. So you've got developers, you have business people, you have entrepreneurs, you have designers, artists, you have speculators, so people who buy, sell, brokers, all sorts of different types of people in the sandbox, and they all contribute to the ecosystem of a functioning game. And that's how I do that. So, cool. I think we might be done with the podcast. We went through the Tech Talk questions. Those are done. We went through the Forbes questions. All right, so Tech Talk was on October 16th with Win Airdrop. After doing a podcast on mine, we did one on his and the four questions there. Then we went on to Forbes Web 3 a day later with Manny and Jack as the host and answered the four questions there. And then we just went over best practices that I found along the way and things I've learned. And how do I describe the sandbox? So yeah, there's our podcast. Let's look at future episodes. So our future episodes, we're done with 36. So that one's all done with now. The next one though is going to be tomorrow, Monday. So episode 37, I'm going to be doing an interview with a writer from Dow Times. And I ran across them while I was researching one of the podcasts about the birth of Sandbox, and also ran across them when writing the AIP for 8.DAO. So I'm going to be interviewing Clement, possibly one other writer, and we're going to be talking about lessons learned that they've seen in different DAOs. Then I'm going to be doing, before the end of the week, I'll have prepared and finished my podcast episode on Sandbox DAO Constitution, the Articles of Incorporation, and the memo, all the founding documents. So I'm going to be looking at that and all the questions and stuff I have from there. Then we're going to be doing a follow-up of Magic Palette with Pepe coming up really soon. And then I'll start into my series of the Sandbox ecosystem. I'm looking forward to that. I think the visuals that I create out of that are going to be very helpful to me in my future podcasts after that. And helping explain and otherwise think about how we're going to do work in the ecosystem, especially when it comes to me working in and operating as a community member in the DAO. I'm learning a lot about DAOs. I just got my DAO certification from the Blockchain Council. So they call it blockchaincouncil.org. So the Blockchain Council, I just finished that certification a couple days ago, I think. And I did the Web3 Metaverse. I did the... Where are you? There. I did this one. The Certified DAO Expert course. Got the certification. And...
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the introduction and overview of the Blockchain Council Certified DAO Expert Certification Program.
I learned a lot from it. Learned a lot about DAOs and how they function. And there's also a lot of other certifications I'll be taking to try and learn about cryptocurrency and metaverse and tokenomics and all sorts of stuff so I can be a bit more educated. But there are a lot of other certifications out there that you can look for. And if you're interested in being a certified DAO expert, from the Blockchain Council is one of the major ones that I've seen when I Google it. But let me know also if you all find other certifications on DAOs. I've been looking for them. I'm trying to educate myself as much as I can on how DAOs function, how they use smart contracts, and the different tools that are available like Discourse or Tally, Snapshot, and all sorts of stuff like that. But that episode's coming up pretty soon. That series is coming up pretty soon for the DAO, the Sandbox ecosystem, starting with the DAO. Sandbox spaces. So on Discord, we have the DAO discussion, the DAO discussion space, and then also the Sandbox DAO forums. On Twitter, there's SandFam. And the Sandbox DAO and the Sandbox Game hashtags, also with the Sandbox DAO Twitter account. Do subscribe to the Sandbox DAO YouTube channel. That first episode's coming up in about a week with Kunta. He's going to be going over a lot of the responses to the poll. And my SandDAO podcast is on there, as is SandFam Cafe. So check that out too when you have time. For Twitter and X Spaces, you've got Mochaverse Hall, also called United Grand Halls, on Monday. You've got Bulls on the Block on Saturday, Coffee with Captain Monday through Friday, and Natively Digital with Whale members on Tuesday. They also just launched their DAO, Whale members. They are one of the biggest landowners in Sandbox. So I currently have a proposal with the Whale DAO for them to vote on every Sandbox proposal, whereas before they haven't been voting. So we're trying to get them integrated as members to help with Quorum. And thank you all for your time. Today was about the Sandow Podcast 31, Forbes Web 3, and Tech Talk podcasts, and the different lessons I've learned, and the history. Actually, it turned out being a history of myself as well. So thank you all, and we are now going to rate.